Maybe you can relate to this. Do you have a child who is excited about a lot of things, eager to share and explore and describe every detail of an experience? Are they ever told to calm down, to be quiet, or just to stop? My friend's daughter radiates her enthusiasm for life. You can just look at her and see how her face lights as she experiences everything around her. She eagerly chats about her most recent topic of interest with anyone who will listen. Last week, her fascination was with mermaids, and she couldn't stop talking about the shimmer of the mermaid's tail and how deep the fictional sea creatures could dive. I'm glad my friend understands that her daughter's delight is a beautiful gift to encourage. Sadly, I also see children who bubble up with eagerness to investigate something new, only to be met with an adult who tells them to stop being annoying. The Canada goose is a brown-bodied, black-necked, honking waterfowl that has recently become ubiquitous in suburban North America, Europe, and New Zealand. With a song like a dying balloon and a penchant for attacking humans, the Canada goose is hard to love. But then again, so are most of us. These days, the world contains between 4 and 6 million Canada geese, although from where I'm sitting in Indianapolis, that estimate feels low, as there appear to be 4 to 6 million of them currently residing in my backyard. Regardless, global Canada goose populations are growing, but they were once exceptionally rare. In fact, the subspecies you're most likely to see in parks and retention ponds, the giant Canada goose, was believed to be extinct early in the 20th century due to year-round unrestricted hunting. Canada geese were particularly susceptible to so-called live decoys. Hunters captured geese, rendered them flightless, and kept them in ponds or fields. The call of these captured geese then attracted flocks of wild ones, which could be shot. Hunters often doted on their live decoys. A hunter named Philip Haberman wrote, "Watching and listening to the decoy's work was akin to the pleasure of hunting with a fine dog." A reminder that humans have long drawn strange lines between pet and prey. I was enough of a feminist to raise an eyebrow at the idea that marrying and having children would make me whole, but if being a feminist meant just doing whatever I wanted and not feeling bad about it, or regretting it, or wondering whether I should have made a different choice, I was not that. I had consumed plenty of narratives growing up that told the same story, the one that frames motherhood as the pinnacle of femininity. If asked to endorse this myth before I had my first child, I never would have done so, but I still felt it to be true. A year after I gave birth, however, I was overcome with guilt. I had wanted motherhood intensely, and now that I had it, I wanted to flee, to be alone, to check that my flesh and my capacity to think were still there. Eventually, I clawed my way back into the workforce and regained some sense of self outside my role as a mother. But when schools and daycares closed in March of 2020 in response to the pandemic, there I was again, stuck at home, my children scaling my chest and back, no escape in sight. While many in lockdown longed to hold and hug loved ones, my resistance to my kids' constant daily touch worsened. By then, I saw the structural conditions: the lack of paid leave, the childcare crisis, mothers as America's only social safety net, that were depriving me of my autonomy. But without any outlet for rebellion, my body rejected intimacy with my children and husband almost involuntarily, just as it had in early motherhood. I was full of rage, but also desire. What I wanted more than anything was to know and be myself, to feel as though I fully inhabited and had my body. But all the ideas about how I should act as a mother, how I should respond to my children's near constant requests for snacks, their demands for attention, their volatile emotions, their hands down my shirt or smushing my face, felt like insects crawling on me.